This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 454, and today we are talking about books being released on March 19th, 2024, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Jeff O'Neill, and we're coming to you from bookriot.com. Jeff, you're now a two-timer.
I fired up Skype because I thought that's what we were using, and my last Skype interaction was with you in July of last year, Lib. So it's, I now call it Liberty. I renamed Skype Liberty on my home screen. So there you are.
I still think about the name that you came up with that day that you wanted to give our show if we ever did one together. Do you remember?
I of course, because I keep thinking we have to make a show just because Give Me Liberty or Give Me Jeff is an incredible name for something.
I think that was like the most like hilarious thing I've heard on the show. I laughed so loud. Like when I went back and listened to it, I was like, wow. But you caught me off guard. It was really funny because you know how many times people say give me liberty or give me death to me.
And yeah. I was just like, I get very few puns on Jeff. So I have to come up as an inveterate punster, I feel left alone on Pun Island. So I had to come up with something. And there we do. Not punning on yours, punning on mine. How about that? Well, thanks for having me, Lib. This is fun. It's what a March, huh?
Yes.
For new books.
Yes, it really has been. I kind of feel like today there are more books that I still want to get to than any of the other Tuesdays in the month.
For this 19th that we're recording for.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's just so many great books. And I feel like I've read, you know, two or three of the best books of the year already, you know, like Martyr and Headshot and The Other Valley. I'm always excited about books.
I was walking around Powell's yesterday and I was like, oh, I need to read that. I had to walk out. It was too much. I have not been reading great. I mean, I've done okay. I had a very productive and quality reading year last year.
Yeah.
For some reason, I mean, January was so slow for what I was interested that I think it got me off on the wrong foot. No feet. I was still in bed. My feet weren't even on the ground in January. And then it started to pick up in February. But my reading endurance and pace has not kept up with the chocolates coming off Lucy's chocolate line. So I got to catch up and stuff some stuff in my mouth here. We'll talk about it. Get into your thing and then you can tap me and we'll talk about books.
Yeah, no. And you're not wrong about January. Like in January, I was like, there are fewer books being published just in general, which was surprising to me because it's an election year.
Right.
And they usually cram them all in at the beginning of the year.
I don't think they have their stuff enough together to be like, let's get them into January to avoid November. I mean, you and I know publishing. They're not like that 9-month flexible or 11-month flexible.
No. And it feels like a lot of them are now getting pushed.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah. But also, what day did I see that seems like it's absolutely been? It's like September 19th, maybe? September 3rd?
I've already seen some for that date,
so
the
19th. Many. The first Tuesday in September is always amazing. But, you know, let me tell you that, first of all, today, the corresponding area code 454, once again, no area code. Like, all the 450s, well, 450, I think, was Montreal, but 451, 2, 3, 4, no area code usage, just general use. But when they say general purpose, like, it makes it sound like you could just put it on anything.
Well, have we Wikipedia'd this? Do we need to get, you know, a radio lab to do something about the general purpose area codes? Is this area 51? They just don't want to tell us. That's what they use for the black sites and stuff like that. I don't get it. I've never heard of general purpose.
Yeah, I've been assigning them to random things. So like last week I gave it to Fraggle Rock. And
oh,
the week
that's
before
good.
Was like inside my desk drawer. So if you want to assign this to something in your life, it's all yours this time. So, so that was the first thing I had to tell you. And the other thing I had to tell you was that all these great books coming out this year, some of them might make good book club books.
Oh, That's a nice transition.
Thank you. How do you decide on your book club book? If you want to make your book club the best club, sign up for our In the Club newsletter. In the Club will deliver recommendations for the best books to discuss in your book clubs. From buzzy new releases to brilliant throwbacks, the books highlighted in this newsletter will drive your book club discussions. We'll also share some book club-friendly recipes and interesting bookish updates from all over. If you become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations plus community features. In other words, we'll keep you well-met, well-read, and well-fed. Visit bookriot.com/in the club to sign up. That's bookriot.com/in the club. And now we're going to hear from a sponsor.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
So, Jeff, do you ever do book clubs? Have you been in a book club?
No. I'll tell you three reasons that I'm the world's worst book club member. Number one is I don't like to be told what to read. So unless I'm picking the book for the book club, I'm
but
already
you're a teacher.
Put out. Well, that's where I get to pick, Lib.
But I mean, you're making everyone else. Funny.
I didn't, you know, so there's that.
You like the to impose your will. Okay.
I like to impose my will. No, I don't enjoy it all. And one reason I don't do a lot of reading ahead, frankly, for things coming out is I like to, you know, kind of take it as it comes. I don't have a TBR. My next book is very rarely picked out for me because I like the selection process. So it's a little bit of a treat when I finish something else. So there's that. The second thing is that I talk all the time. And so I take up all the oxygen in the room and I like to talk. I'm interested. I've tried to harness this over time, but it still doesn't work very well. And the third thing is I'd rather be reading than listening to someone else talk about a book, generally speaking. Now, this might be the bitterest of ironies for someone who does a bunch of podcasting and writing about books for a living, but there it is. I don't know what to say. I contain multitudes or not that many pieces, but I do like talking about books with people, but I really prefer one-on-one. So if Rebecca and I have read the same book, or I like listening to you talk about a book, or like, but like a group of people sitting around and whether or not they've read the book is always a concern to me. And I don't know, I'm a bad book club member. I think there is some version of a book club I would like, but it is too nerdy, bespoke, and annoying to actually exist in this universe. How about you? Have you ever been a part of a book club?
Yeah. I think I talked about it a few episodes ago with someone else, so I'm not going to go into it again. Yeah. But yeah. But like that's where I read Seabiscuit.
Okay.
That had just come out. That's how long ago it was. I did it like twice, I think. And then
you were in a horse book club. Was it horse themed? You know, it was. What was that? Oh, never mind. There was a Geraldine Brooks book called The Horse. Did you read that book?
I didn't.
Yeah. Are you a Geraldine? It was a huge book.
And that just came out last year.
Or
maybe the year before, but not that long ago.
We're old and COVID is weird. I think if you think it came out last year, it probably came out 6 years ago. We have to like do some sort of like interstellar time warping.
No, I promise. I think maybe the paperback was last year, but it wasn't that long ago. I tend to shy away from books with animals in the title just as a general rule.
Okay.
Unless I know like nothing is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you never know.
It tends not to work out great for the animal. They're not like often like living on a farm in Connecticut and everything's fine, eating clover.
Yeah. So it came out in June of 2022. So almost last year.
Okay, sure. I'll give you credit. Yeah. Over the last 5 years, if you're within 9 months, you got it right. So I'll give you that.
Look. Yeah. I know some people who are in book clubs, but, you know, I always say that readers are the friendliest, most social group of people you will ever meet who would much rather be alone away from everyone else.
That's right.
You know, like you go to like Book Expo, which they don't do anymore. But when we did, you know, everybody there would rather have been back in their room with their new galley that they just got, you know, but it's okay. So we're going to talk about some new books now, and I'm going to kick it off with Memory Peace by Lisa Coe. Lisa Coe wrote The Leavers, which did come out several years ago. Like, I'm not imagining that. And this is a story of art and friendship and purpose. It spans from the 1980s to farther in the future than we are now, than the 2040s, about three Asian American friends who meet at weekend school in New Jersey. They live in a town in New Jersey, not very far from New York City. And they bond over being different than their peers, being above the antics of their peers, and also their shared problems, the racism that they face, their family life, and the expectations that their parents put on them. But all the girls go to different schools, and they try and keep in touch in some of those ways that teenagers do back before the internet. They write letters, and they call each other and talk for hours on the phone. Giselle is a young girl whose father moves back to Taiwan for work when she's in high school, essentially abandoning her and her mother and her brother. And now her mother is struggling, you know, as Giselle graduates high school. Giselle wants to be an artist, but she's not sure she wants to go to college for art. And she doesn't get a lot of encouragement from her teachers, who think her art is unusual and not very good because she doesn't adhere to the strict rules that they place on her. But she also wants to help her mother, but she also wants to be independent. You know, she wants to read and be with her friends and be alone, is what I'm saying. Mm. Jackie is from a very rich family, and she's kind of up on technology. Like, she's going to learn about things before her friends. She's also queer, which really upsets her parents. So she's having a hard time with them and dealing with that. And Ellen is just too cool for school. I mean, she goes to school, but like, she's the coolest one because she grew up in New York City. When they go to the city, she's there. She knows like all the cool places. She's not afraid of anybody on the street or anything. And she becomes socially involved and becomes an activist. And as the girls get older, turn into young women, they wonder if what they want matters, if what they're doing matters. Giselle stages art pieces, but she and sometimes only one other person know that she's actually doing them. Like, she does this really elaborate, I don't even want to tell you what it is because it's so unusual, but she does this elaborate year-long thing that only one other person knows about. And then after it's over, it's like, well, I did this thing, but nobody knew about it. And she does lots of projects like that. And, you know, she's like, I'm going through great lengths and I'm taking great restraints, you know, cutting out these things and not doing this. And they're also very involved. But do they count if they're not recognized by the art world? She calls them memory pieces. And as she gets older, she slowly becomes a part of the art crowd. And the girls move in and out of each other's lives, or should say the women now. And they're moving towards the future, towards the 2040s. And they will have to decide what they want, what principles they will stick to, and what changes and sacrifices they are willing to make. This book moves at such a fast clip. I think I read almost the entire thing in one sitting. Mm. I just sat down and it, because it's so, it felt so real. Not like just like the teenager part, because the women are the same age as I am, basically. So like the stuff that they're talking about, the TV shows, the clothes, the music, you know, I was like, yes, just that. It also has this really romantic idea of art. And it's like at the tail end of, you know, that romantic living in New York City in a tiny cardboard box on top of a roof with 800 other people, you know, like Patti Smith's, you know, Just Kids, you know, New York City, when kids could rent, you know, a warehouse and be artists and do their thing. And then, you know, they started getting pushed out. It sounds so cool. And Jackie discusses technology, you know, telling her friends about computers way before the general public was using them, because her parents are very rich and they get her one. And they're like, oh, this sounds lame. Like, no, thank you. Like, why would you want to do this? And it makes me laugh because when I was in high school, we stopped by the house of a wealthy classmate to do something. I can't remember, but he was reading an encyclopedia entry for a project that we were doing on a computer, and was telling us like, oh, I have this subscription to an encyclopedia on this computer. And we were like, that is silly. Like, why would you pay for that when you could just go to the library and get a book and look at it, you know? And so like, it's really interesting. And Co's look at our world and these women's lives 15, 20 years from now is really imaginative and interesting. It's just, I felt like it was really raw and real and fantastic. It does have content warnings for racism, sexism, disordered eating and body shaming, sexual assault, and loss of a loved one. It is Memory Piece by Lisa Coe.
All right. That was going to be one of my picks, though I have not read it yet. So I disclaimer, I do not read ahead as much as Liberty does. So I've read about one and a half of my picks all told. But
that's
my
okay.
First pick I have read, don't tell Rebecca, she doesn't know I've read it yet, is James
$5.
By Percival Everett. $5, that's a steal at twice the price for your silence and complicity. I am so thrilled. What auspicious timing for me to get to join you on the day of the publication of James by Percival Everett for myriad reasons. But let me back up for a second and say that if you have not encountered the Percival Everett experience, what a delightful treat awaits for you, the kind of listener that will listen to a podcast about new releases. What a moment for Everett. Even though Cora Jefferson did not mention his name on the stage at the Academy Awards, which I was not a fan
of. Seriously?
He did not come out of his mouth. So we're going to mention that. So we're going to take every opportunity we can to say Everett's Erasure was the underlying book upon which American fiction was built. I guess a short plug, Rebecca and I recorded, I think it's up now in the Book Riot podcast feed, an episode about our favorite representations of the publishing world. And then we talked about Erasure and American fiction together. We both read the book and watched the movie and talked about it. So if you're the kind of person that likes that, go check it out. Bookriot.com/listen. You can find all the show notes to all of the great shows. So Everett happened to be, I don't think it could have been timed, frankly, that this book would come out a mere days, not even 2 weeks after that. Great win for American fiction. And it responds to Erasure in a couple of different ways, which I'll talk about in a second. So it is I almost feel like saying it's a retelling of Huck Finn from Jim's point of view is both correct and wildly inaccurate, because I think, to my mind, this is the single best retelling / re-perspectizing. That's a word, right, Lib? Check me on, you can check me on that.
Sure.
That I've ever encountered. I guess, okay, do you want to say that Hamlet's a retelling of the Spanish tragedy? Sure, go crazy. But I'm talking about a real direct, using the same characters and the same names. And it's the kind of thing that Everett is really amazing at in 19 different ways. I'm not surprised. I wondered why he finally made the switch to Doubleday. So there's some publishing insider stuff here that I think is interesting. He made the switch from Grey Wolf to Doubleday for this book and got what I heard was a mid six-figure advance. I cannot confirm nor deny that that is true, but that's just what I've heard, which is certainly more than Grey Wolf could have ever paid him and probably greater than the sum total of all of his advances for his 20-some-odd books that already exist. And I was like, why now? Like, why this one? Is it this because it's the most commercially viable? Because retelling of Huck Finn is something? I think there's part of it. I think, again, recency bias is a real killer, but this might be the most broadly interesting and accomplished at the same time of his works. And he's written some that are kind of bangers, right? Dr. No is very readable, though it's sort of messing with the Bond villain stuff, but James Bond villains are eminently marketable. There's way more Bond movies that's made $1 billion than Mark Twain movies that make $1 billion. So this story is told from Jim's perspective. And it's hard to spoil, but also there are surprises here. I don't want people to not get to experience on their own if they're going to do that. Told from Jim's experience, and I think the first thing that jumps out to me, if you've never read Huck Finn, one thing to know about Huck Finn, we actually had a question on the Book Riot podcast, is whether it's still worth reading. That's an interesting question, but beyond the scope here, is that the Adventures of Huck Finn is an adventure story. I know that sounds reductive, but it's in there. An adventure in a more sort of young adult kind of way, where it's a bit of a lark. Huck himself never really seems like he's in any real danger. The biggest danger he feels like he's in is like maybe he's going to get sent home and has to be grounded for a few weeks or something like that. There are so moments of peril, but it doesn't ever feel like you're in danger of, say, Huck getting killed by a stranger or drowning on the Mississippi. And one of the things that James does is actually, it is a It's a little less Adventures of Huck Finn, Fun on the Mississippi, and a little more Heart of Darkness. In fact, a lot more Heart of Darkness, going down the river, up the river. The whole thing is, at any moment, Jim could be captured, killed, lynched, abscond, you know, die by escaping. The whole thing is fraught with peril. So it has a tension and a tautness that makes a ton of sense, but isn't present in Huck Finn itself. The other major change that Everett makes, and there's some timeline stuff. He moves it up a couple of decades. So you do have sort of the eve of the Civil War coming, which in the original Huck Finn, it was not even in the offing. So that's an interesting layer as well. That Jim himself is a reader. He's read Rousseau. He's read classical thinking. He's read the Bible. He's even come to his own understanding of the Bible as not a religious document, but a cultural one that exerts a sort of power and is not there to say liberate the soul, but rather to oppress the already oppressed. And then, so he has this internal, super erudite, learned, and literate interiority, but then he has to play the slave, the uneducated slave. And Everett, I think, is at his best and seems like he's having the most fun when he's moving in and out of modes, where a character is moving in and out of kinds of discursive modalities. And also when they get to do different kinds of things, like Everett seems as interested in language and representation and just the idea of writing than any sort of political or cultural idea. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you're reading something like this. And it's also a spin on Du Bois's double consciousness, right? That, you know, Black people have to think like Black people and white people to survive. But there's another move here where James has to think like a slave and as a white person, but then he has to think of how a slave would act to a white person so they appear like a slave who's unthreatening, right? Because part of this is about survival, and he has to keep his light under a bushel, as I guess we used to say in Sunday school, when it came to his interiority, his intelligence, his capability, because otherwise he's a threat, because an educated slave certainly was not only illegal, but seemed to be a threat of a kind. And there's all kinds of stuff that happens here. There's like, you know, so that is related to minstrelsy. And then there are scenes of minstrelsy in the book. Some scenes from Huck Finn appear here, some are not. And then there's some wholly created inventions. It is a reader's book in this regard, which is, if you know Huck Finn, if you know Everett, if you know the canon, especially American canon, you're going to see, and the American songbook, there's a lot of songs and other things. Everett always does this. There's always letters and texts and other things that crop in and out. I think it's fantastic. I think also as it relates to Huck Finn, I guess I was one of those wondering, would this be some sort of takedown? Would it be, you know, what would it sort of obliterate the existence of Huck Finn as something we should take seriously, or, you know, question its place in the canon? I don't think it does that. I don't think it does that in the text itself. And the acknowledgments, Everett even sort of pays homage to Twain directly, you know, complimenting his humanity and humor, I think it is. And so it is a response to Huck Finn, but I think it is knowing that there are gaps in Huck Finn, but also does not think that therefore the original text itself is invalid, and, you know, a tool of oppression or so outside the realm of modernity it should be discarded. So I was so pleasantly surprised. Now, let me also say this. It is a terrifying book. I didn't do a trigger warning chart, but let me just say it's a Black guy running from slave catchers in the South in the 19th century. So, you know, whatever you think there could be a content warning for, let's just assume there is for a moment. So I don't know. I saw some of the publicity for James, the actual books that got sent out. Did you get a hard copy, Lib? Did you get one sent to you?
I did not.
Okay. Neither did I. Shame on them. Anyway, I'm kidding. But apparently there are buttons in there that are like 1950 style, like I Like Ike era presidential campaign buttons that say something like give Everett the Nobel Prize. And that was the final thing that clicked in for me about Doubleday the Advance. I think this is someone over there is thinking maybe this is the thing that enters him into a different kind of stratosphere when we come. And I think, you know, the Nobel Prize, there's many wonderful writers all around the world. I cannot claim to know any meaningful percentage of world literature at this point. But the marketing, I guess, worked on me. The Everett glow up, the Everett sort of bubbling up to the first rank of literary culture, whether it's going to be mainstream American culture, I don't know, though American fiction, even though people don't know his name, it's out there. What a day. What an exciting time. And I think this is one of those books that it's going to be there at the end of the year for awards seasons. But more than that, I think it's a kind of book that can end up on, well, I guess this kind of Atlantic list that we may talk about in a few minutes of the 100 greatest books of novels of the last 100 years. So that's James by Percival Everett.
All right. My next book is called Next Stop by Debbie Fong. This is an imaginative and sad middle grade graphic novel. I just read this like a couple of days ago and I was like, wow, this is amazing. I have to talk about it on the show. I love it when that happens. It's about a young girl named Pia. She's in middle school and she has had a really rough school year. They have just moved, she and her parents. She's had to change schools. She doesn't have any friends. The reason they moved was because her younger brother died. And her parents have moved to get away from his memory, to get away from, you know, the people that want to keep talking about him, to get away from where it happened. And her parents are having a hard time. I mean, they're all having a hard time, but her mother especially. Her mother has a severe depression now, and it's really hard on Pia. She doesn't know what to do for her. And then Pia hears about a magical underground lake where, if you go far, far, far underground into this cavern, you can get a wish and it comes true. Like, you can make a wish, it'll come true. And like, it can be anything that you want. So Pia's like, hey, I know what I would wish for. And her father happens to have a friend from college who runs a tour bus that travels to many strange roadside attractions throughout the country. And it ends at this underground lake. And so she tells Pia's father that she'll keep an eye on Pia. And he thinks it'll be good for her to get away for the summer. So he agrees to let her go. Pia wants to go, obviously, because she thinks if she goes to this lake, she can make a wish and it'll make her family whole again. It'll bring her brother back. Her mother won't be sad. You know, and she doesn't tell anyone why she's going. But we know. And while she's on the bus, taking her little trip, she makes a friend along the way, a girl her age, whose mother is the supervisor, the one who runs the tour. There's also an elderly couple. The wife is very sick, and they think that this is their last chance to heal her if they go to this lake and wish for her to be well. There's another elderly woman who reminds Pia of her grandmother, and she likes talking with her. There's a woman with a little kid who thinks Pia's the best. And this group, they visit several very unusual tourist attractions, like the world's largest watermelon, the junkyard park, and the Stairway to Nowhere. And as they get closer to the lake, she notices weirder things are happening to the land and also to the people near the lake. Like, she sees some very strange things. It's a heart-squeezing story about loss and childhood and grief. You know, Pia is dealing with what we always say, like, grown-up problems, but they're not grown-up problems because a parent's depression and the loss of a loved one are very much kid problems, too. They affect them just as much. And except that, you know, she's young and a lot is being put on her right now. But it sounds sad and it is, but it's also beautiful and sweet and lovely. And weirdly enough, there is a middle grade graphic novel coming in the fall called Plain Jane and the Mermaid by Vera Brosgall, which I absolutely loved. And it also deals with a young woman who's lost her brother and now her parents are adrift and it's causing this problem between them. So that's the theme, I guess, this year. I don't know. But I want to shout that one out now, too. But this one is so good. It has content warnings, obviously, for loss of a loved one, depression and suicide, trauma and grief. It is Next Stop by Debbie Fong.
For my next one, I got to be who I am, Lib. So I don't know that anybody out there is going to be super excited about this. Probably it'll be have more purchases by libraries than at Barnes and Nobles. But you never know.
Wait. Oh, before you go ahead, can I stop you there for a second?
Of course.
And can we hear from another sponsor?
Oh, yeah, of course. We got to do that.
All right. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Hey.
All right.
Inveterate skipper of sponsor breaks, I sympathize greatly.
We both talked so much about our books. I was like, whoa, look at what the time
look
is.
At the time. We'll move along here. So my pick is The Black Box, Riding the Race by Henry Louis Gates Jr. From Penguin Press. A brisk 304 pages. It's one of these books that's trying to be both a historical academic text and something that an interested layperson could find interesting as well. I don't know if it succeeds. I haven't read the whole thing. I read the chapter on Phyllis Wheatley and the chapter on Hurston because I was curious about both of them for reasons that are, I guess, kind of in the pitch for the book itself, where Gates has been, I mean, for the last 50 years, the preeminent academic scholar that studies Black life in America and especially literature. And this book is organized around notable Black authors and how they wrestled with their own sense of their racial identity, how they embraced it or rejected or reconciled it, used it, played with it, built it to suit. And of course, it varies by time and region and personality and then artistic project and character. And each one of them, you know, these are names that you know. That's Frederick Douglass and Wright and Morrison and Ellison. So, and those are well-known people. But that Gates is trying to bring to bear that the idea of race for all of them, and even today, is still a contested one. It is not a stable, monolithic idea that we've got it figured out and this is just how it is forever. And it's a fascinating way of organizing this kind of idea. And, you know, for those of you out there that have read and love Their Eyes Were Watching God, you might find Zora Neale Hurston's own conception of race surprising, if not maybe upsetting at some points. Maybe you didn't know that much about Phyllis Wheatley and her navigations of a much, much earlier time are fascinating to see. And how their negotiations to survive and thrive, mesh with their own lived experience or not, is very, very fertile ground. So this might be one, if you want to get it from the library because you have a particular interest in one of these authors, you could do it that way. Gates works in some of his own experience, some of his own biography and scholarship as well. I mean, he has been, for as long as I have known who he is, and I haven't read everything, I can be sure, he has been a bit of a problematizer of the construction of race, that sort of easily sort of off the shelf one. I don't remember the name of the show where he like does the genetic analysis of people, like famous people come on, like, actually you're 17% Ghanaian and 81% Irish, and people are surprised that it's like that. And because it gets to his central kind of Gordian knot, which is that race is both constructed and super real at the same time. And that's kind of the central paradox that all of us in some degree, at least in America, and especially for Black people, and maybe even most importantly for Black artists, to figure out how they're going to participate that in their own lives and how that's going to influence or not to various degrees their work. So that's The Black Box, Riding the Race, Henry Louis Gates Jr., Penguin Press. That's mine. That was my next one.
All right. I don't know if I've ever told this story before, but many years ago when I worked at the bookstore, we hosted him.
Oh.
And the owner was like, could you go let, I think the door was locked or something. He was coming in the back. So could you let him in? And I was like, sure. And so I didn't know what to expect. I knew he was like genius, you know, very well respected.
Yeah.
And I opened the door and I said, hello, I'm Liberty. And he said, hello, Liberty, I'm emancipated. And like just sort of laughing at his joke. And he just like cracked jokes like the whole time. And he was just so much fun. It was.
I have met him once great, too. But... And he was very gracious to me. And his nickname is Skip Gates.
Yep.
And this might be the first time I've said this on a podcast. My middle name is Skipper. So I have a very strong affinity for anyone who goes by the somewhat mocking moniker of Skipper. My nickname, and a lot of my friends in high school called me Skip and still do. That's how I know I'm back home. Someone calls me Skip. So
there you go.
That's a great line from him.
Yes. So, all right. Those are some books that we have read or read some of that we enjoyed.
Yes.
And now, wow, look at the time. We are going to fly through our next few that we are excited to read. I'm going to start with The Stars Turned Inside Out by Nova Jacobs. I loved The Last Equation of Isaac Severy, which was Nova Jacobs' last and I think debut novel. It was a puzzle mystery involving a scientist. This is also a science-related mystery set in Geneva, where the body of a young physicist is found in the tunnels of the Large Hadron Collider. So the people in charge bring in a detective named Simone.
Love this. I'm going to read this too. I didn't know about this. This sounds amazing. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm so excited.
Okay.
I'm writing this down right now.
Well, I mean, like, Isaac Severy was so smart. Like, I'm going to read this as soon as I get my little hands on it. But so the people in charge bring in Simone. Simone, which we don't know why, but somehow has a personal connection to the lab, is also a private investigator and is very interested in science. So she's going to look around to find out who wanted this guy dead. Was it his romantic interest / colleague? Was it his other colleagues / academic rivals? Simone's investigation turns up secrets and possibly even a spy. So that is The Stars Turned Inside Out by Nova Jacobs.
I'm staying in space. Nonfiction. This is called The Asteroid Hunter, A Scientist's Journey to the Dawn of Our Solar System by Dante S. Loretta. And I will read, or in this case, listen to, because I do most, if not all, of my nonfiction on audio, almost any book about space that's interesting. And the thing I like even best about these kinds of books is if the writer is a scientist and they work in their own story of becoming a scientist in relationship to space. I love science memoirs that are about something, but also include some biography, autobiography, I guess, in this case, is how it goes. The particular story here is of, I mean, this is on the tip of your tongue, NASA's historic OSIRIS-RE.X mission to return an asteroid sample. I'm sure you had that at the tip of your tongue, Liv. I know I did. I think about it every day.
My brother is piloting it.
Yeah, right now. OSIRIS-REx mission. And it's to go get a chunk off an asteroid out there in space, Lib. We go out in space and we're getting a piece of that. It's not the moon that's just sitting there. This is an asteroid just going around doing stuff. We got to send a robot up there. We're going to break off a piece and get it back. The asteroid's name was Bennu, which sounds like some inanimate object in the Star Wars galaxy that would have
sounds
weird
like Baby Yoda's brother. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Bennu. It's amazing. So it is also, it has a chance, and don't, you know, mark your calendars. There's a chance that Bennu is going to collide with Earth on September 24th, 2182. So in 160-ish years, just kind of, you know, duck and cover. Get ready for this, because there's a chance it's going to happen. So anyway, I'm really looking forward to the danger, science, coming of age. I also like the practicalities, how this kind of science stuff works. And if especially for a dullard like me that doesn't really do great with math and chemistry and astrophysics, I'm really looking forward to The Asteroid Hunter by Dante S. Loretta. I will be listening to it in a car on the way to somewhere sunny, hopefully somewhere soon.
All right. And in keeping with the space theme.
Yeah, space it out.
My other pick is The Mars House by Natasha Pulley. Pulley wrote The Watchmaker of Filigree Street, Kingdoms, many other books, including The Half-Life of Valerie Kay, which is out in paperback today. This is about a terraformed colony on Mars. This is like my favorite new science fiction story is that, you know, Earth sucks and we've had to make a new place somewhere else. And so that's the case. Earth is a mess and people are leaving it for this colony on Mars. And humans who are refugees on Mars are called Earthstrongers, as opposed to the humans who have been born there or have acclimated to the lower gravity or naturalized, as people call it. And January is a ballerina from Earth who gets mixed up with Gale, a politician who runs on a platform wanting to force all Earthstrongers to naturalize. They want to make everyone who arrives there, like force them to acclimate to the lower gravity. And when Gale holds a press conference that goes horribly wrong, they propose a deal that January marries them for a marriage of convenience in exchange for citizenship without naturalization. January won't have to go through the becoming acclimated to lower gravity process. And January agrees to this, but then he soon discovers that Gale is not the monster he thought they were. And also, someone wants Gale dead. So, action, mystery, gravity, not so much into gravity. It. It's The Mars House by Natasha Pulley.
Do you have the imprint off the top of your head, Lib? Do you know who that's from?
No, but okay, I can tell you in one second.
No, that's no problem.
It's my somebody last, big.
My last pick is a real question mark for me, in a good way. And I like question marks. So Taya Obrett debuted to, I mean, a debut literary fiction novel like The Tiger. How many times do we get a splash like that? Not very often. Not very often. And then it was nominated for the National Book Award, I believe, at the end of the year, and did very well. And then Inland, her second book, came out. And my joke on the BR pod about Inland is I keep forgetting it exists. And I'm not even sure that I've read that. I think I did. I couldn't tell you one thing about it. And I think for me, that's why The Morningside is going to be interesting, because I really like The Tiger's Wife. And I'm Schrodinger's booking Inland by Taya Obrett, because that's 50% chance I have or haven't read it, which is telling in its own way. And the third book sounds interesting, but also, is this going to be someone I personally follow? And is she going to have a career where she's publishing with PRH, right? Is this going to be where you get a big advance and a big splash and everything that's coming out? And that is more interesting to me maybe than the specifics of the story, which I'll try to give an overview here. It feels a little bit like this. If you replace the synopsis and put Emily St. John Mandel's name on it, it sounds like it could be Emily St. John Mandel sort of book. Yes. So there's a mother and daughter. They move into an apartment building called the Morningside. Things have not gone great in the world. It doesn't sound like half the town is underwater. Most of cultural memory seems to be gone. The daughter gets interested in this woman who lives in the building, who knows the stories of the demolished world. And I guess everything other than that starts to feel like word salad for a literary spec fic, because it can have a sort of mistiness to it before you start reading that's hard to describe. But I like the sound of this. I like her. I think it could be interesting, but I don't know. And I'm really interesting. The Tiger's Wife won the Orange Prize for fiction in 2011. God, that's 13 years ago now.
Yeah. Amazing. Like, the Orange Prize is not called the Orange Prize anymore.
Is it just a women's prize now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's Inland by Taya Obrett. I don't know. I mean, it could go either way, but to some degrees, I'm more excited about not knowing what I'm in for than even something that I feel like it's a fairly high floor. But this also has a really high ceiling, so I'm looking forward to this one. That's out. Right. I guess these are all out March 19th. I'm so used to the Book Riot podcast giving the publication date, but by definition, these are all March 19th.
They're all out today. All right. So it's time for the paperback lightning round. Here are a few paperbacks out today as well. Starting with Old God's Time by Sebastian Barry. It's about a retired police officer who's now living in a castle by the Irish Sea. He is visited by former colleagues who have been digging up a decades old case. Now You See Us by Bali Kaur Jaswal, about Filipina domestic workers who help out a coworker arrested for murdering her employer. Night's Edge by Liz Karen. In this world, vampires are real. They are also regulated and rounded up by the government. And there is a young woman named Mia who helps her mother hide her condition so she doesn't have to leave home. Biography of X by Catherine Lacey, about a woman named CM who is writing the biography of her wife who has just passed away. Her wife is called X. And CM is learning so much more about X than she ever knew, both good and bad. The Killing Code by Ellie Marnie. This is a YA novel set during World War II at a girls' college, which has been turned into the U.S. Signal Intelligence Facility, where young women are studying code breaking and where someone is also murdering students. Sisters of the Lost Nation by Nick Medina. This is a horror novel about a young woman investigating the disappearance of young women on her reservation. 0 Days by Ruth Ware, about a wife and husband security hacking team where they go in to make sure your security is safe. And the husband is killed and the wife is blamed and she is now on the run trying to find the killer. And In Memoriam by Alice Wynn, a historical fiction about World War I and two young men on opposite sides of the war who fall in love. So those are some paperbacks. And Jeff, you know, surprising no one, we talked for a very long time about books. So like really quickly, you know, the Atlantic released a list of what they think were the greatest American novels. And there were some surprises that were left off. You know, and I just asked you, like, you know, as you teach English, like if there was anything you thought, you know.
Well, I used to, it's been a minute right. at this point, but And you know, I'm interested in this kind of thing. Are they the best? Are they the most famous, most influential? We can always, you know, I've made a list or two in my day, so I know how these things go. I guess I get, as I've aged and mellowed, I care a little bit less and I'm a little more interested in how these lists are put together, if that makes sense. I guess,
yeah.
You know, I would prefer myself not to have two books by the same author. Like there's Absalom, and The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sure, I could, you know, absolutely, totally amazing books. But if I'm putting together 100, I want a little more variety if I can get it. Now,
yeah,
none of this can be objective, that's for sure. I also think that of the more recent picks, again, it's all subjective, but I am interested in thinking about, okay, say you do this same list for the same time period in 50 years. What are the books that might make it from the last 10 or 15 years? When I've done the best books of the century list, what I do is I say, I actually displace it by 20 years. So I wouldn't even have started this. This list would have ended for me in 2004 if I were doing this today. Because the most recent 20 years is too hard to know. It's too hard to know what's going to hold up at all. And even 25 years is too much. And there's a, I think probably, and I'd be curious your take, like the books from the last 10 years or so are pretty idiosyncratic. Like if you're someone like us that listens to this, or you listen to a show like this, or the Book Riot Pod, or you follow books, there's books on this you probably haven't, certainly haven't read, but almost certainly haven't heard of, I would say at this point, which I think is pretty interesting. One thing about the long arc of history is that it's hard to remember how many books are put out. And if something like The Catcher in the Rye on this, and sure, I don't have any problem with that. But the books that are on this from earlier in the century, these were phenomenons during their time. Like so few things get remembered that you need to make more of a splash, or sometimes in the case of Moby Dick or other kinds of things, you can get picked up and have a lot of things later. But so I would look at something like, and I'm not making a case for this, but I would look at something like A Little Life, right? A bunch of people read that book. It's about something. It was a phenomenon. It is interesting and people have their problems with it, which I understand. Let me tell you, all these books have some weird stuff going on in them. 60 of them have been banned, by the way. No, I thought that was an interesting note by The Atlantic at the top. So I feel like that's a, that was me. There's a little too clever by halfness from the last 15 or 20 years or so. Other than that, sure, fine. I mean, maybe, you know, The Day of the Locust. Are we still doing Nathaniel West? Does anyone know that? It's a good book. I'm glad to see Death Comes for the Archbishop was their Cather pick. I was thrilled to see Cather at all, one of my favorite writers. And Death Comes for the Archbishop is probably, I think it's the most accomplished, though I think it's like the third pick in like high school and college reading syllabuses after, I don't know, The Professor's House and My Antonia. But I love Death Comes for the Archbishop. That could be, I think that could be published today and people would like it. So I don't
I
know.
I just
that
read
was
it last year and I liked it.
Did you
it.
Like it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. You know why? Because it rules. That's why you like it. That's, I mean, you know, there's no To Kill a Mockingbird. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I do want to point out that the last book on this list is The Biography of X, which I just mentioned, which is out.
Which I really liked, but that is a big look for Catherine Lacey's The Biography of X to be on this list.
Yeah. I think I've read almost all of these. But I have to say I'm shocked. And this would have made your 20-year cutoff. I cannot believe that The Known World by Edward P. Jones is not on this list.
I looked at that, too.
That is the book that I would add to this list. But I would also add The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead.
Do you take that over The Intuitionist if we both follow our own one author rule?
Yeah. As for The Great American Novel, yeah. Do you know The Intuitionist? It just turned 30 this year.
I know. Rebecca and I did a show about it for the Patreon.
Right, of course.
A reread.
Yeah. I talk a lot about books to a lot of people. I don't
know. No, I'm not saying. I'm just telling the people out there. I think, You know, the Cisneros, I'm going to have an interview with John Philip Santos on First Edition, not to shamelessly plug some other project of mine for BR, who's a lifelong friend and participant in Chicano literature, on the 40th anniversary of House on Mango Street. I would have liked to have seen that on this list. Carmelo is a really good book, but in terms of where that was doing in the early 80s, The House on Mango Street it rules. If you haven't read that, by the way, out there, it's like 100 pages long. You can blast through it. I there was also some Liberty Corps stuff on here. We got The Secret History. We've got Geek Love. Yeah. I mean, that is speaking your language.
Yeah. I mean, that it is. It really is. I think the only other thing that I could think of that I would have added, which is like very just us, I think, is we're so big. So Big by Edna Ferber. Remember we did a show about that
once? I know. I mean, part of the show about Edna Ferber is how no one remembers Edna Ferber. So it'd be kind of out of character. I mean, we will have done our work if suddenly Edna Ferber is showing up.
Well, she was a question on Jeopardy the other day.
You've read The Zebra Striped Hearse by Ross McDonald? I've never read that book. I've heard of it, but I couldn't tell you one thing.
I haven't read all of them.
Yeah.
I have read
the more recent ones.
Is Ross McDonald the one who did The Girl with the Cinnamon Skin?
I don't know. That just said I don't know who that
or
is.
Did he do Red Right Hand, or is that John McDonald? I'm getting them confused sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, which is also a really great Nick Cave song. And also, I'm very off track now. So let's talk about what we're going to read next.
All right.
What are you going to read next?
There's Always Next Year by Hanif Abdurraqib will be my next listen once it is out. I don't do a great job, especially with pre-pub stuff, but audiobooks are even harder. Probably after I do The Asteroid Hunter, it's coming out March 26th. Abdurraqib, I guess you would call him a cultural critic at this point. His last book, Little Devil in America, I got turned on to because Rebecca loved it. It's about, you know, black artists and artistry in many forms, and it's fantastic. And this is about basketball. Abdurraqib loves basketball, especially the Minnesota Timberwolves, but I don't think that's a central point here. Literary writing about basketball is not something that existed when I was a kid playing basketball, but there's more of it out there. Ross Gay writes wonderfully, especially about pickup basketball. And I look forward to Abdurraqib writing. I don't know exactly. I've tried not to learn that much about it because all I need is Abdurraqib on basketball. Everything else to me is, I need nothing else. So it's kind of one of those things where I don't want to see the movie trailer if I'm interested in the movie because I want to be surprised and delighted when I get down there. But he is sensitive and funny and incisive and unafraid. So I'm really looking forward to that. So that's one of mine. Should we do them both, or do you want to go back and forth for two?
No, you can do your next one.
The last one I've been saving. It's been out for a while. The Hunter
it
by
came
kind
out
of
last week. Last
I think it was
week?
March.
2 5th. Weeks ago.
Yeah. So as you're listening to this, it was two.
Well,
weeks
I don't
ago.
Know what day it is. Yeah.
I had pre-ordered it.
You're not too far behind.
And I was saving because I'm going to New York for work next week, and I'm saving for my plane ride. So it's the follow-up to her, The Searcher, which came out a couple years ago. Tanner French is a great mystery writer who I had never read before, though I'd heard all sorts of wonderful things, the Dublin Murder Squad and all that kind of stuff. Great, great, great. I picked up The Searcher because it was $2 and it was wintertime on Kindle and I needed something to read. And I devoured it and I recommend it to like 9 people. The main character is a retired Chicago cop that retires to the Irish countryside. But you know what, Lib? If you're a retired cop, you just can't retire to countrysides anywhere because stuff happens. And if you've got a heart of gold like these guys do, you got to get involved. Now, is there any defining characteristic of this guy that says he's from Chicago? I don't know. Has Tana French done anything about Chicago, done research? I don't care, but I like the book, and I'm looking forward to this sequel. It sounds like there might be 3 of them, but with these kinds of mysteries, they're not. Break my O'Neill's razor rule, which I tend to only read series once they're done. When it comes to these kinds of episodic standalone mysteries, I don't care. If it's the same heart of gold investigator, I can get along. So I'm looking forward to that. I when I'm on a plane, I've called it, I look for artistic anesthesia, which just makes me forget I'm on an airplane hurtling through the sky. And I'm 6'4", sitting in a middle seat in economy. I need to not be there. And reading a book, especially a mystery by an author I really like, is my single best way of doing that. Dramamine and Ton of French is my survival technique for my cross-country flight.
Yeah, she's awesome. I haven't read this one yet either, but I did read The Searcher.
Yep.
So I just got my hands on the new Ruman Alam called Entitlement, which comes out in September. So
could all
of
his books
next.
Be called Entitlement, by the way? You could retire. You could retitle every Ruman Alam book Entitlement.
This is about a young woman who is helping an octogenarian billionaire give away his fortune. But, you know, she kind of also thinks some of that money could do a lot for her, too.
Yeah.
So that sounds fun. That comes out September 17th. And I also plan to read Under the Bridge by Rebecca Godfrey, which they just announced there was going to be a Hulu series of this book. Huh. It's based on a true crime with Lily Gladstone, who is in Killers of the Flower Moon. Ooh. And I was like, why does that sound familiar? And then it turns out I had, in fact, bought it like several years ago because I think it was either Sarah Grant or Megan Abbott. Mm. Somebody mentioned it as being like one of the best true crime books of all time. It was written in 2000. So
wow, I don't know it. I don't know it at all.
Yeah. I didn't put them together. I read her novel, Torn Skirt, which came out a few years before that. And then these are the only two books she wrote. And sadly, she passed away last year. So I'm going to read that. It's like 500 pages long. Okay. Yeah. So that's it for us today, Jeff.
Yeah, it is.
We talked about a lot. You can visit bookriot.com/in the club to sign up for In the Club. That's bookriot.com/in the club. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. Jeff, where can people find you online?
Nowhere. Don't find me. You don't find me. If you want to find me other places, the Book Riot podcast, of course, Rebecca and I do two shows a week now. What's new, cool, and we're talking about in the world of books and reading, though we don't use that anymore, but it's just in my brain now. It's like adenosine triphosphate. It's just floating around there. I'm also doing First Edition, which is a podcast that I started last year, and I took a hiatus as the Book Riot podcast went to two, and I'm getting geared back up. Two episodes a month, focusing on literary fiction and the publishing world. The most recent episode I did, Xochitl Gonzalez, whose new book, Ananda DeMonte Laughs Last, is out, which I really liked. We did a Anatomy of a Scene, where we each picked a scene from the book to talk about, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. The next one coming out is John Philip Santos talking to me about the publication, importance, history, and long life of The House on Mango Street, and some other stuff coming up. I'm having a good time over there. I think those are probably the best places to catch up. Thanks for having me, Lib. This is always a great time.
Yes. Thank you for joining me. You can find me on Instagram at @FranzenComesAlive, which is less funny every week that I say it because fewer people know what the reference is. But I mean, I barely use the social media right now. It's kind of wild here, but that is the best way to find me. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter, which someone I know writes. Oh, it's me. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.